I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back.
We are live. My apologies, guys. I was just saying I was late today. Sean's normally the late one. I've been late twice in a row now. My apologies. Sean, that was a dig at you, which
I thought it was a compliment. You know, I'm not late. I thought that's how I took it.
You are not late. It is me. But we are with Steph Smith. Steph Smith is my coworker. Steph runs trends and is just like a creator at our company. We kind of just tell her to do stuff, and she does a great job. I met Steph. How did I meet you, Steph, on Twitter?
I think so. You reached out. I wrote an article around a year ago, and you reached out based on that.
And Steph's article, it had one of the better headlines I've read. I'm a big copywriter headline fan, and it was, "To be great, just consistently be good," right?
Yeah, something like that. Exactly.
And it was a great headline. But so we're going to have Steph here. But before we get into that, Sean, I did meet up with Ty Lopez, texted me last night, and he goes, "Hey, I'm in New York. Do you want to meet up?"
And oh, shit. So,
I met up with him for about an hour, and we talked about how to hire, and a bunch of great stuff. He's cool, man. Ty's a cool dude. He's changed my perspective. I've changed on him.
How swole was he?
He's big. He is a buff dude. His dad was a professional bodybuilder, he said, so he definitely has those genetics.
Could he beat you up?
He's probably stronger than me, but no, I think that I probably am 20 years younger than him, so I haven't.
There's a feistiness inside you that he is not aware of.
You don't think he's aware? I think people are aware. I don't know. Anyway, I don't need to talk about beating Ty up. I like Ty. He's my friend now.
Great.
What are we going to talk about today? Steph came with like a list of ideas, which I always love when people do this.
It's a 6-page list. So I think this is going to be like a 26-part episode. All right, Steph. So did we do you justice introducing you, or did we leave out any important bits?
I think you did me justice. I work on trends at Sam's company, The Hustle, and I create stuff for fun. I think that's a pretty quick summary of what I do.
She has a good personal website, stephsmith.io. And Steph is just like, you know, there's like this whole community, Sean. They're called indie hackers. You know what they are?
Yeah, of course.
Steph is like the definition of an indie hacker. It's like this weird, nerdy community of dorks who build awesome stuff.
She's better than 99% of the indie hackers I've ever met. most of the indie hackers I've met build stuff and they never get it to anyone. Like there's like zero distribution muscle. And so I got to give her credit because she actually like writes stuff that people read, builds stuff that people see. And I think that's like a pretty big separator. That's a line in the sand. Like there's one line in the sand, which is like you make nothing or you make something. All right, cool. And then it's like you make something and people see it and like it, or nobody ever hears about it. You know, it's just a tree in the forest. And so I got to give you credit. And also your website is awesome. I just, five minutes before this, I messaged her. I was like, "Hey, who made your website?" She's like, "I made it." I was like, "What?" And then I just offered to buy the template. I was like, I want one of those. Can I have that? Like, can I have a website as cool as yours? So it's definitely awesome. You should check it out.
All right. We need to stop
sucking up to Steph.
Sucking up to Steph.
No, I appreciate it. And I'm super stoked to be here. But yeah, happy to jump into some of these ideas if you guys want.
Yeah. And so what's,
by
what's
the way, Sean, I think Steph listens to most episodes we do, which is weird.
Definitely. I've listened to every single one.
Great. God, so you have so good odd. Taste too. All right. So what are some of the ideas that you know, you're interested in right now?
Cool. So the first one I'll start out with and throw out there is remote/work-from-home stuff, which I know I feel like everyone listening to this is doing a little eye roll because it's like the most common thing that people bring up. But I feel like most of the things that people are talking about in this space, they're either like collaboration tools, the next Zoom. They're just basically taking stuff that's already out there and being like, how can I use my skills to create exactly this? And I don't think that's, you know, there's a lot of room for that right now. But what I do think there's room for is a lot of other niche ideas. If you just kind of start from the fundamentals of what does like a remote worker need, what are the new gaps that exist? So let me talk about a couple of them. The first one is just how benefits change for especially large companies. So if you think about companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon, they're known in the past for having these like incredible offices. This is, you know, perks in general are one of the things that they actually use as a competitive edge to bring talent in. And so with everyone remote, how do these companies still have an edge? Well, you can't really, at least I think right now they don't, but they can start to develop it and other companies can develop it as well. So there's some cool companies that I found that a couple of them are Hopier, Hopier.com, June.io, another one's called Comp.io, C-O-M-P-T. And basically these companies are kind of identifying all of these new types of benefits that remote companies can have. So it's anything from like mental health support to, you know, at home fitness. But I did a Twitter thread the other day and there was some really interesting ideas. One of them was just, you know, a stipend so that people can spend on Upwork so that they don't have to do all the shitty stuff that they don't want to do. And
that was, I think the guy who came up with that, Sean, wasn't he on the pod?
I didn't see it. What's his name?
Chris? Was it Chris Back?
There was a guy that came up with that and it was Aki. a really viral
I think thread. That was him. And so basically, Steph, his thing said, our perk towards employees is we give $500 a month for Upwork. Is that right?
Yeah. I think it's basically like, okay, what are all the things that you hate doing in your job? How can we make those disappear for very little cost to us? And that actually, you know, this is a net benefit to us because now you have this much more time to be an awesome employee, do what we actually hired you to do. And so that's one benefit. But then there's all types of stuff like, you know, I've heard of people like buying their employees like wine or beer subscriptions, anything from like companies actually starting to pay. Yeah. Maids pay for their internet, their utilities. It's like, what are like all the things that you would normally pay for? Like in an office, you're paying for utilities, you're paying for a maid, you're paying for these things to make your employees' lives easier, better. And how does that kind of switch to now that everyone's working from home? And then, as I mentioned, how do these big companies kind of get a competitive edge and say, hey, we're going to make your lives awesome. We're going to make you want to join this company because it's going to be, you know, just so easy for you to work at home and you're going to love it. And so I think there's a huge opportunity.
The examples you have are Hopier, H-O-P-P-I-E-R.com and June.io. Those two seem pretty much like the same exact thing, right? How big do you think these are?
So I think they're just starting, and I was researching some of these before this, and I think Hopier especially, that was actually a company that pivoted. They used to do like in-office snacks. Like they were actually targeting companies that had offices, and they're like, okay, well, that's gone, at least for now. What do we do to like fill this gap? And I think from what I saw, most of these companies operate where they actually, they say, hey, the hustle, you want to give your employees like $50 every month to spend on whatever. And there's this like assortment of things that you can spend that on. And then, you know, the hustle pays, I think like $5 a month per head extra to have Hopier like figure out the logistics and all this. I think there's opportunity to extend this in a couple ways. Like one, have you ever heard of this site Key Values? keyvalues.io.
Yep.
So it's an awesome site and it's run by one person. And it's just this site that basically aggregates like the key values, the key things that an engineer looking for a company would want. And it kind of isolates, okay, if you care about like lunches with your team, then like these companies do that. If you care about remote before everyone was doing it remote, these companies do that.
Let me ask you, well, I'll ask you about this in a second, but how big is this key values thing you think? .io or .com?
Keyvalues.io or sorry, .com. Sorry. It's
how big is this?
So I don't know the exact run rate, but it's one person doing it. And I know she gets a couple $1,000s from each of these companies per year to be on this website. Cause it's, again, it's kind of like, this is a B2B site where companies are like, look, I want our company to look good. I want, you know, even if I get like one engineer from this, who's awesome, then it's worth the like $3K I spend. So I don't think this is like a venture scale business at all, but for an individual, they could go do the same thing with this like remote benefits idea. And I think they could kill it.
So there's two like interesting variations of this, right? One is how do I use money to make my people more productive? So obviously you can get great tools, but another thing might be, well, if I'm always worried about, you know, my health benefits, or if I have to clean my house because I'm working at home and that's just a task I do, that's an hour I spend doing something that's not work, right? So this was like the Google thing, which is like, hey, just come into work and stay here. We'll feed you. You don't have to worry about that. We'll do your laundry. You don't have to worry about that, right? These really weren't like retention perks so much as they were more like what I'll call productivity perks. They knew they could squeeze an extra 2 hours out of each person's day by automating away a bunch of the busy work that they had to do to run their lives. And so there's perks like that that exist. And then there's the perks that are like, these perks say something about us. These are our recruiting perks. These are, you know, we're trying to make our people happier and feel like they're at a company that's like aligned with them at their core. And that's where, you know, you get something like key values or, you know, I know right now at our company, there was a big like hoopla about like, are you going to match charitable donations that we make? And there was like a lot of like pushback of like, why isn't the company matching? And I was like, dude, because the company doesn't have to match. Like, that's a crazy expectation that the company should just donate to your favorite cause because you decided to donate. They, you know, so it was crazy to me that it was so expected and anger was out there, right? But this is, you know, I guess a thing that people care about and where they work. And this is where me and Sam both, I think, kind of agree, where we're like, God, everybody's so coddled and soft.
We got, someone at our company. And that's cool. If he's listening to this, that's great. Continue sharing your opinion, but I'm going to disagree with it. But they shared their opinion in our Slack of saying we should do a percentage of sales to this charity or something. And I was like, no, not a chance. Not a chance. Like, we can give money away sometimes, but like to say a percentage of sales, no.
Right. And so I think, you know, the interesting thing about these tools is that they're arming companies with different ways to either solve the productivity problem or solve the, you know, what I'll call the values opportunity with their employees. And I like the Upwork example. I like the cleaning, you know, hire a cleaning person example. I think those are some things that do make sense because I've seen the expenditure of what, you know, what our company would spend on office, you know, just office cleaners, power, insurance, like just the net money that goes into paying for a commercial building. You have a lot of, if you're not paying for that anymore, you have a lot of buffer to go around that you can either drop to the bottom line or you can like stipend out in some way.
So our lease in San Francisco was about 15 grand a year. And then probably add another 3,000 on top of that for just random stuff. Yeah, we're maybe 5,000. We're definitely saving probably close to $250,000, and we're a 30-person company.
Right. Did you do any unusual perks like at the Hustle or any company you've ever been at? Have you ever done any unorthodox perks? What'd you do?
The one that people love that I don't think is that special, but people love it, is unlimited Amazon books.
That's a good one.
Unlimited is like capped at 5.
So that's kind of like the values thing, right? Because you love books and you're like me. We just buy any book. If somebody says it's good, you just immediately buy it.
Yeah. And another thing that we've done in the past, and people are like, oh, well, that's so generous of you. And I'm like, dude, I'm doing it because you're going to make me more money, which is if Steph or anyone wants to go to anything educational related, even if training, it's kind of related to her job and it'll cost 5 grand, I'm like, yeah, go. I don't care.
That's cool.
And I'm like, I tell them, I'm like, it's very selfish of me. I want you to be better and more valuable and you'll make us more money. So
and
I think
Steph,
it's great.
Did these things matter to you or not? You know, they're nice to haves, but they weren't like key decisions.
I mean, I think the learning one is definitely huge. And Sam, like he puts his money where his mouth is. Like he's willing to, you know, if you come, he actually approached me one day and he's like, hey, here's this $3,000 course. Like looks really good. You want to do it? And I actually had done the course. It was Reforge, but he's definitely, very keen on like helping people educate through like reskilling. So I think it's awesome. To be fair, to your point, I don't know if it always moves the needle, but it is kind of like a signaling thing and helps your employees right. Stay happy.
We did one that was I think people will emulate something like this, where we created a bonus pool that was tied to our KPI. So it's tied to user growth. So I said, this pool is going to start at $5,000 a month. And as it grows, as our user base grows, this pool is going to grow. And I showed kind of how it's going to grow. And then I said, every month we're going to be voting. Peers going to vote on who kicked ass this month. And I get a double vote because I get to see a lot more of what you guys are doing. You guys don't all see each other's stuff. So me and our CTO, we both got like 2 votes. And this did 2 things. One, it was like, it forced all of our engineers who are, you know, totally allergic to emotions to like exhibit some appreciation for each other. Like you'd have to write why this person kicked ass, and we would read them out. And so people were like, it was like this forced kind of awkward thing, but people liked hearing good things.
Was that effective, Sean, for motivating?
I felt it was effective, but again, maybe I'm biased. Maybe you'd have to ask one of the engineers how effective, but I know the part that they really liked, which was you get the money. And so we said, there's a first and second place. So the first place got 4K, the second place got 1K. And the rule was, this is not like money to live your life. Like we pay you well enough. You get, you know, you get a handsome salary as an engineer in Silicon Valley. You don't need you know, grocery money. This goes towards something that you wouldn't otherwise buy for yourself, but you'd love to have. So it was only experiences, travel, like learning opportunities. So like Jason Hitchcock used it to get a stylist and he like redid his whole wardrobe. And another person did it to first time traveling outside the country. They didn't even have a passport before this.
That's cool.
And so they really liked those things. And then our only rule was, you know, you got to tell the story to the team about what you blew your money on in an entertaining way when you're done. And so that I thought was awesome, but like it was very tedious for me to set up. All right, I want to take a quick break to talk about startup investing. You know, I'm a big fan of startup investing. I do it myself, but there's many different ways for people to get involved in startup investing. This week's sponsor, Our Crowd, is a new way that I just heard about. You know, if you wish you were early in some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 or 2020, Our Crowd investors were, and you could join them to see what's next. With Our Crowd, any accredited investor can have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. Our Crowd investments have IPO'd like Beyond Meat or been bought by companies like Intel, Nike, Microsoft, and Oracle. Today, you can join Our Crowd's investment in Texie, a software startup revolutionizing how leading enterprise companies provide remote customer support. You can get early into companies like Texie or other companies if you go to ourcrowd.com/thehustle. If you're interested in investing, your account is free. Just go to OurCrowd. That's ourcrowd.com/thehustle.
Let me bring something up that I want Steph's opinion on. This is the most interesting thing that she said. She brought up this company and she said it's a one-person operation. She has shown me another company that's a one-person operation. Sean, I think, is interested in one-person people operations, businesses. We could extend that to three people, but what are the most interesting 1 to 3 person operations you've ever seen?
That's a good one. Let me think. If you have one, start. I'm gonna start thinking
Steph
about this.
Steph has one. I know she does.
Well, I mean, there's so many these days, but I just, you know, I'll call out the obvious one that I think a lot of people are familiar with is Peter Levels. It's a friend of mine, but he kind of started this like revolution. I mean, he didn't start it, but he really kickstarted a lot of people getting into it. And what I think I'd call out is, you know, years ago before a lot of people were like indie hacking on their own, he did this thing called 12 Startups in 12 Months. And a lot of people tried to recreate it. I wouldn't actually, you know, say that people should recreate that. They should recreate something that allows them to explore a bunch of things and then exploit them after. But basically he started with something called Nomad List, and it was just, it was for a problem that he knew very well, you know, classic story. He started with, I think a spreadsheet, which he posted on Hacker News. And then he just knew exactly who his people were. So he knew that he was looking for digital nomads who were looking for places to go. And Nomad List has grown a ton. Now it does probably, I think, like 500,000 a year. Then he expanded that to Remote OK, which also does around 500,000 a year. And it's all done through him. And then I think he contracts out his servers to one guy that he pays like, you know, $2,000 a month for or something. And it's so funny because he's also known for this. Like, you know, a lot of people overcomplicate things. They're like, which framework do I use? And he always, you know, if you follow him on Twitter, I think yesterday he was like, oh, like this business, which brings in X thousands of dollars every month, runs off of like one PHP script. And all these people in Hacker News are like, it was so funny actually, if you went on Hacker News, because it trended there, someone was like, oh, well, I'm sure there's some like deep infrastructure behind this. And he's like, nope, it's actually just more simple than you think. So he's someone that I think a lot of people were inspired by and that I was inspired by too.
Is that what you thought she was going to say, Sam?
Yeah, she told me about it. And it's fascinating. I think it's cool. His website, it's not like he's one of the, I call these people nerds. I say I'm a nerd too. So, but he, his branding is pretty sick. Like he's got these cool hype videos. Like he's like a cool guy. Like, so anyway, I like that. Do you know of any, Sean?
The one I was going to say was sort of like in the, I think there's a lot of these in the creator space or media space, right? Like I think, you know, Joe Rogan is a good example of this, where it's basically him and, you know, Powerful Young Jamie, and the two of them have built what's essentially a $1 billion enterprise, just sitting in a room with a microphone and an internet connection. And there's a bunch of examples of this, like Ben Thompson from Stratechery, right? He's sitting in Taiwan, you know, writing about tech in an email newsletter, and I think it's just him. I don't even know if he has like sort of his young Jamie.
I've heard he has some people.
I think what ends up happening is that, because I always say this too, right? Like, I'm like, my next path, I think, is going to be very solopreneurish. And I think everybody either has, you know, an army of sort of outsourced contractors who deal with, you know, customer service and social media and stuff like that, or they have like one right-hand man type person that is happy to be behind the scenes. Like, you know, I think I talked to the guy from Wait But Why, and it's just the two guys, and one of them's really the public guy, and then one of them's the behind the scenes guy, and they write their blog, they do cool shit, they buy businesses that are profitable, and like that's their show, and they're happy to just be the two of them working on it. So I think that there's quite a lot of people in the creator space that create content or media companies, like with Joe Rogan being, I would say, the biggest example.
All right, I'm going to give you a bigger example. Do you know Matt Drudge? Have you guys ever heard of Drudge Report? Steph's Canadian, so she maybe doesn't know what it is.
Yeah, you've told me about it.
I've heard of it.
Okay, so Drudge Report, conservative or right-wing, I don't know what you want to call it, news aggregator. It's drudgereport.com or org, or I don't know what it is, but it says, Sean, it looks like, I can see in your glasses, it looks like you're reading it right now. Yeah. If you scroll to the bottom right, it'll show you how many page views it has had in the last 30 days. Does it say?
Let me go see. Past 30 days, 733 million. Just a cool 730 mil.
So 730 million. Let's assume they get a $10 CPM across, probably $14 to be, it could be. So what's that? So do 750 million divided by 1,000 equals, I can't remember.
730,000.
It's like 7 million.
So let's multiply that by, let's say $8, because he's conservative. So people ban him all the time for advertisers. Let's say $8. So $6 million a month, I bet, is what this guy makes. And the rumor is that it's just him and one other person. And he's been doing it since 1996.
For the record, not bigger than Joe Rogan, but.
Dude, what are you talking about? That's revenue of $72 million a year.
Yeah, Joe Rogan's making more of that off Spotify now.
No, he has a deal that is potentially up to $100 million, I believe, over a few years.
I think it's per year.
And I would say, okay, yeah, Joe Rogan's great. His setup's great. But I think this guy's setup is way better because anyone can be at it. Anyone can add those links. All it is a lame-ass website with just random links. Anyone can do that. Also, this guy's been doing it since 1996. And it used to be even bigger than it is now. Right. He was the guy that broke the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton scandal. So this guy's been around doing this for a long ass time. So I bet you if you told me he's made $1 billion off this website over the course of a lifetime, I wouldn't be surprised.
BuzzFeed News has him at $30 million in ad revenue per month.
There you go.
$30 million per month. Wow. Incredible.
Dude, it's nuts.
The bit, my favorite kind of like got rich lucky story, by the way, which I think is a different question, is I bumped into somebody who was, and their friend came over and started talking to us. And when the friend walked away, my friend goes, you know, that guy has a crazy story. He's, you know, he has a successful company. He's like, but he basically became a billionaire because when he was starting up, his office was, you know, where the Google guys were starting. They were like right next door. And so they needed server space when they were, I think they're still at Stanford at this time. And they needed more servers. And so he was like, oh yeah, you can like rent some servers from me. Like I'll just, you know, I'll host you. And he started renting them servers and they just paid him in Google shares. And so he became like a billionaire just renting a few servers to the Google guys super, super early on.
Well, you heard the story about the guy who did that at Facebook, right?
The painter?
David Cho. They're like, hey, can you paint some graffiti on our wall? And he goes, yeah, all right, yeah. It's going to be $50,000. And they go, how about $50,000 in stock? And he goes, oh yeah, okay. And so he made $100 million off of it.
Yeah, not all lottery tickets, you know, are printed. So some of these are pretty amazing. All right, Steph, you have a whole bunch more ideas. We should jump into them. So you want to talk more remote work or you want to shift to a different kind of area?
I've got lots of remote work stuff, but let's move on just so we get more diversity. Kind of tied to one of the, what we were just talking about, how there's like, you know, a lot of celebrities have their own digital space, but most of the time they're focusing on social, they're focusing on deals with big companies like Spotify. One of the opportunities we called out in the trends group recently is this opportunity to almost become like the agency for celebrity websites. And if you actually go to many celebrity websites, like a shocking number of them, they're really, really bad. And so we called out a couple of them. Drake's was like a one-page site that went to like a broken link. Roger Federer, who does, you know, his net worth is $450 million. If you go to his page, it's like broken CSS, like completely unreadable. Looks like it's from the 90s. David Copperfield, who like surprisingly has a net worth of $875 million. His site doesn't have an SSL. Again, looks like it's like from the 80s even. And so what's amazing is that these people have so much money, but because they're in a particular industry, they're a little bit shielded from like the potential of creating their own, you know, digital home. A lot of them go to Instagram, a lot of them go to TikTok, or just don't really believe in or really see the opportunity on these sites.
What's Drake's website? I like Googled Drake and nothing comes up.
Yeah, I can't find Drake's website. I was doing the same.
So I don't even know if it's, maybe it's not even his official website, but that's what come up. If you looked up, when I looked up Drake, it's like drakeofficial.com. And now it's actually looks like it's even more broken than before. It looks like it might even be down.
I Googled Drake official and it, October's Very Own comes up number one. Yeah. I don't even know what that is.
Interesting. Well, there you go. So, and then even in addition to Drake, I looked up a ton of celebrities. Many of them don't even have a site at all. Jennifer Garner, Ryan Reynolds, like just tons of famous people who don't have a site at all. And I think, you know, you probably wouldn't start with people of that size because one, like they're doing pretty well on their own. They clearly don't care about it. And so it would be a little bit of an uphill battle to try to convince these people like, hey, I'm going to create a great site for you. But I stumbled upon this spreadsheet of, I think we shared it at The Hustle, and it's Cameo's highest earners. And so what's interesting here is that Cameo is, you know, anyone on Cameo is like doing well enough to be on Cameo, but not doing well enough to like not be on Cameo. Yeah.
That's right? How you, like, by the way, that's like the secret. That's how you see which celebrities are broke. You go to Cameo and then you sort by cheapest.
Right. And so, yeah, you're like, okay, if you're doing well, you're not going to create like a $30 TikTok video for someone. And so if you go here, what I would do if I was someone just like who could build websites really well, I would just go down this list and just go to each of these people's websites, see if they even have a website, and just be like, hey, like this is how your website could look. This, you could even build it for them if you know how to build a website quickly. Be like, I'll sell you this website for X, you know, either X dollars or X shares of your products that you sell through it. And I think you could just make a killing because so many of the people in kind of like media entertainment have no idea how to do tech well. And so I do think it's a little bit of an uphill battle, but I think if you're able to get crack into this, like there's so much opportunity.
What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I kind of love this one. I wouldn't do it as an agency because fuck agencies. And I also wouldn't try to sell it back to them because you're selling to a one buyer party. So you have no leverage. So I would instead, I would take advantage of the fact that you have really, really popular names that get searched all the time that don't own the, you know, definitive domain about that name. And I would figure out a way to auto generate, you know, news about Drake or Drake's like biggest fans or whatever. Like I would basically take their full name, you know, .com or, you know, official at the end or something like that. And I would make it a kind of a fan page / news site that just aggregates their Instagram posts, their Twitter posts, puts information, you know, their wiki page, their net worth, like all the things that people want to hear about, like who are they married to? Is their wife hot? You know, like if you just go look at what people Google about celebrities, like is this person gay? You know, I would try to rank number one on SEO for this person's name and all the questions about this person. And then I would just monetize through, you know, one of the following. I would either, you know, just do AdSense and not bother ever selling this back to them. Or I would create some kind of like paid text list to get some kind of like, you know, updates. And then I would potentially sell them that, be like, hey, anytime you want to sell something, I have your most loyal fans. I have like 3,000 of your most loyal fans. Whenever you have new tickets, new shows, new merch, new whatever, you know, you just tell me and I will text it to them. And then, you know, we cut a deal of how much revenue share I get. And I would start doing deals that way way later, but I would just start totally permissionless, initially.
I love that. Because when we talked about that in the trends group, there was pushback with people being like, yeah, you know, I think the biggest problem here is that some celebs just don't care. And I love that approach because it's just like, you know, it doesn't matter if they don't care. I'm going to go take all the search volume of people trying to look for something.
Take advantage of the fact that they don't care, right? Yeah, like they clearly don't care. So how can I benefit from them not caring?
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I'm going to make it. What I would do is make them make their landing page just an email capture form mostly. And so they would build a big email list. I actually had an idea similar to this before I started The Hustle. I mocked up this business where I noticed that, so like it was, this was obvious back then. So it wasn't like crazy, but musicians only made their money basically off of concerts. And I used to use this website called Songkick in order to find which concerts were coming towards me, to me. And I was like, man, like if my favorite band had my email address and my zip code, they should just email me when they're coming, or they should just like talk to me on a regular basis and get me to buy stuff from them on a regular basis. And so I went and actually pitched a handful of bands where I was like, you guys, let me build this website for you. And the way it's going to work is that I'm going to ask people their zip code and they're going to be notified on a regular basis when you're going to be near, and I'll teach you how to sell stuff to them. I didn't go through with it because I don't think musicians have enough money to pay what I wanted to make, but it was in a similar vein. And I think it's quite interesting.
All right. I really like that one. Steph, you're on a roll. Give me another one.
All right, cool. So the next one is HIPAA compliance, and it could be other kind of legal compliance things as a service. And so the reason I'm pulling this one up is because, so a lot of people, if you don't know what HIPAA is, it was started in 1996 under Bill Clinton. It's has to do with healthcare and making sure that certain details are, you know, kept appropriately and things like that. But there's all of, you know, as most legislation, like it's hard to understand, it impacts different industries, and a lot of people don't know how to become compliant. And the reason I'm pulling this one up is because, so I had a call with a coworker a couple months ago, and his fiance works in, she's like a therapist or a psychologist. And I'm just asking, like, you know, during COVID, how has this changed, et cetera. So obviously they're doing everything online. And I was asking what tech they're using, and they're using Zoom. But one thing that was really interesting is he said, you know, they're actually only allowed to use Zoom. Zoom is the only HIPAA compliant solution on the market. And so I just found that so interesting. Like every single app out there literally cannot sell to certain industries because they're not HIPAA compliant. And they probably either don't know that they're not HIPAA compliant, or they don't know how to become HIPAA compliant. So you can easily just create, you know, a service that says, hey, you actually approach these companies, say, did you know that you're actually losing out on sales in all of these industries because you're literally not allowed to sell to these individuals? So I think that's one interesting thing. But you could also, you know, past HIPAA, do the same thing where you basically hire a couple lawyers, you track what legislation is coming to fruition in the next like 3 months, 6 months, whatever. And then you are the first mover and you basically say, hey, I know exactly what you're like, you know, PPP recently. I know exactly what you need to do with PPP. Here's the like 3-2-1 of what you need to do. And you just create that as a service and you're just like the first mover on any new legislation for companies.
Okay, those are two different ideas that are both pretty interesting. The HIPAA compliant one is kind of cool. That's pretty easy to do, right? I mean, this is a very simple business to pull off, I would imagine, right? Because it's like a checklist to become HIPAA compliant, right?
I think it's simpler than people think, but if you're not an expert, you're like, where do I start?
That's pretty cool.
How do I know if I'm compliant, et cetera?
There's, when I had an alcohol business, there is a company that you pay money and they make sure your online sales are compliant with laws regarding alcohol. I don't know if they did well, but it's a similar idea. What did Abreu just share?
I think he's sharing some examples of HIPAA compliance as a service. I've seen some startups that do this as well. So this is definitely an idea that is in motion. And then there's other versions of this, like there's companies like WorkOS and others that are providing for developers, you know, if you develop a piece of software that you want to be enterprise ready, you have to do, you know, SOC 2 compliance and SSO sign on, you know, make that available. And this is just like a bunch of repetitive grunt work that, you know, a developer would have to do just to be able to handle enterprises and pass their security audit. And so these companies are doing really, really well, basically just providing those as, you know, services to any developer who wants to pass the enterprise security audit and offer enterprise level features out of the box. I love those businesses.
That company I linked is huge. They just topped Inc. 5000. They have thousands of employees and they kind of do a similar thing to what you guys are talking about, just like making sure companies are GDPR compliant, stuff like that.
Yeah, they raised $200 million at $1.3 billion valuation. Holy moly. OneTrust.
OneTrust. Okay. I like it.
And what was the second one? Wait, OneTrust. Oh, wow. OneTrust was the number one fastest growing company. Oh, OneTrust was number one on Inc. 5000.
pretty cool. Well, let me
By
throw
the way,
out
Sam,
another idea.
Is Inc. 5000 like basically some bullshit like Forbes 30 under 30, or is it like, what does number one mean? Is that like actually in some objective way, or is it?
Yeah. So Inc. 5000, you might need to pay money to submit yourself, but it's all, you have to submit yourself and you have to submit the trailing 3 years of financials. So it's not bullshit like Forbes, where it's just like who you know. It is entirely objective, but it's bullshit in the sense of it's only for people who submit themselves.
Right. OneTrust is not actually number one necessarily, but they are amongst the people who submitted on some rank. They ranked at the top. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, it tells you their growth. So in their case, it says 48,000% 3 year growth. And like so that's verified by Inc. Sorry, Steph, go ahead.
No, it's okay. We did an analysis of Inc. and there's like a surprising number of people who have been on it for like 10 years. And you're like, okay, there can't be this many companies that are actually at the top of, you know, everything for that many years. And so it is like Sam saying it, people have to submit to it. It's not the top of everything.
Yeah. Very few Silicon Valley companies too, which is interesting.
That's why I'm saying, like, is this, how can this be the indicative list if it doesn't have most of, you know, the high growth tech startups on there? But doesn't matter. Okay, you know, whatever. Who cares about Inc. 5000? Tell me about this subreddit. You know, what are you doing when you lurk around Reddit? Because I think that's an area where there's a ton of signal, and I know you guys look at it for trends. So, Steph, tell me what you've been seeing on Reddit.
Yeah. So I specifically was calling out a tool. It's called Anvaka. We're gonna have to link it in the show notes because it's a pretty gnarly URL. But basically, it's this amazing tool. So I know there's tools like subreddit stats and other things that'll say like, hey, this subreddit has X number of people on it, or these are the keywords that are trending. But this one I love because you enter any subreddit into it, and so just like you can start with anything super broad. Like if you start with r/digitalnomad, you enter that into there, and then it just gives you this like mind map of like, of people interested in the subreddit, like what are all of the nodes that are related to this? And then of those nodes, like what are the like niche subreddits related to that? And it's this amazing, just like, you know, mind map again of like where you can discover ideas. And so just to give you an example, if you look up r/longevity, you're like, okay, longevity is like, I understand what that is, but like some of the things that come up as like related stuff, there's like microbiome, nootropics, dark futurology, transhumanism, singularity, and you're like, whoa, like, okay, that's really interesting. Like, what are those things? And you like double click on that. And it's just like this wormhole that I think is really interesting, not just to like go get ideas, but if, for example, you're creating something to do with like, you know, longevity, you're trying to understand your users better. You're trying to understand like, who is this person that I'm trying to attract? And then you get like a wider view of like, your type of individual, your users, not just this like niche thing, like they're interested in longevity. You're like, oh, they're actually, you know, probably super technical and, you know, interested in things like singularity, and they're probably developers and they care about their health because they're looking up stuff like fitness and nootropics. And so I think it's just this amazing tool that I think more people should use.
I love this. I think this is really neat. I would use this if I was buying advertising places. So I typed in flexibility, and there's another one called that I'd never heard of called Overcoming Gravity. There's another one called Grip Training, and there's another one called Brogress. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's great.
I just typed in a not safe for work one, and it's amazing what just came out of it.
Right.
A whole world I didn't even know about. There's some terms in here I'm going to have to Google after this. Wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, I did one of those too. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I like this. What would you use this for immediately?
The first thing that came to mind was if you're running Reddit ads, this tells you what other niche subreddits you could target or post content into. Other than that, I think, you know, for me, the most interesting part about Reddit is because I care about like, you know, what's actionable. So like, this is cool because it's so simple and it gives you a simple output. It doesn't give you like the best output ever, but it took like 2 seconds to do, so it didn't take much input. What I really like is the, you know, the subscriber growth. And if I could ever figure out the the retention. So basically, you know, on every subreddit, it shows you kind of like how many are currently on the page. And so what I like is the ratio of like total subscribers to how many people are currently on the page, because that's kind of the engagement levels. And what I found is that you know, the subreddits where there's a lot of opportunity are the ones where that ratio is really, really high, where you're able to get a lot of engagement per per subscriber to the community.
So one way to do that, it's manual. So what I've been doing is I use this tool to kind of like scope out things. And then if you go to subreddit stats, you enter a subreddit and it'll tell you the rank and all this stuff. But as you're saying, it, what matters is like who's active. Is it more active now than yesterday versus a year before? So you can see how subscribers change over time, but there's also this feature where you can see the most popular posts. And you can see that within the last year versus all time, et cetera. And you can basically see like, A, like in the last year, are there popular posts? And are those posts more popular than the ones from the prior year? And so that's kind of like a quick gut check to be like, is this actually more engaged with, or is it just, you know, kind of dead subscribers on this?
Right. And Steph, you, you're one of the writers, or you're the main writer for Trends.
Was, okay.
What happened? You don't write for Trends anymore?
Now I lead the product, so I don't write as much anymore. Yeah.
Oh, death by promotion. Okay, gotcha. So give me, so if you don't subscribe to Trends, go put your credit card down, and it's basically like this podcast, but better and written format, so it's easier to consume. Give me something from this week's trends, or maybe last couple of weeks that stood out to you that you're like, oh, that's actually really cool. That's a really cool opportunity for somebody.
So I'm going to call it a quick one just because it's timely and it's something that, you know, everyone's obsessed with the markets. But one of the cool things that Ethan, one of our analysts, found is this thing. It's basically the site that tracks all insider trades. And so if you are an executive somewhere, you need to, by law, report any trades that you do above a certain amount, I believe. And so it's the site that just tracks all of these things or all of these insider trades of people selling, buying, etc. You can see exactly who it is, exactly what their title is. And I think there was this quote of from that Ethan found, which is like, you don't know exactly why someone sells, but you always know why someone buys. And if someone buys, it's because they think the price is going to go up. And if they're an insider, you know, it's not foolproof. This is definitely not financial advice, but it's a signal that for whatever reason, whatever they know inside is leaning towards positive. And so what I think would be cool is if someone just took all of that information and they just created like an insider trade smart alert system that you could configure based on certain industries of stocks that you're interested in. You could track certain stocks. If you know, if I'm really interested, I think Cloudflare is an amazing company. If I could just know every time there's an insider trade for Cloudflare and it would just text me. I'm not saying that it would be super actionable, but I think that would be a neat little project. And in general, I think that site is super interesting.
So interesting. We should do this for one. It is so interesting. And this week's one, Sean, was Public Storage, the daughter of the founder who, I don't know if she's a chairman now or what she is, but she bought tens of millions of dollars of Public Storage stock, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of amazing. All right. We're down 3% today, but Public Storage.
Is it?
But that's okay.
Maybe she knows
something. Yeah, it's down a little bit today.
That's
buying.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. That's one of my favorite section lately is the insider trades. I'm not going to buy any of the stock because I don't buy any stock, but or no one-off stock. But that's crazy cool because it was just cool to learn about it.
Yeah, you don't even need to buy stock. But yeah, for example, if like the storage space, it's like, oh, okay, well, this person obviously thinks their company is going to do great. What does their company do? What's the gap that maybe exists outside of that company within storage? And like, you know, could I create a company there? So I think that in general is like just a signal of like insiders that, you know, you can't get if you're not paying attention. So I think that could be, someone should create that. I would subscribe to that.
So I'll tell you my insider trading story. So I accidentally did an insider trade not too long ago where I sold a bunch of my Amazon stock and, or I bought or I sold or whatever. I did a transaction. And then I remembered, I was like, oh shit, there's a window in which, because technically I'm an Amazon employee, there's a window in which I'm allowed to do this. And this, you know, the trading window opens up once every quarter or something like that. And that's the time when you could do this. And I was doing, I had done it outside the trading window. And I was like, damn it, this is how I die. You know, I go down for insider trading of all things. I didn't even have any info. And so then I email our general counsel. And I was like, hey, you know, I did this, you know, I don't know if this is going to trigger, you know, a SWAT team outside my door in 5 minutes, but, you know, hope we can figure this out. And I was really worried. I was like more worried than I probably should have been. And then he emails me back like 10 minutes later and he's like, don't worry, you don't have any insider info. I was like, hey.
Left-handed compliment.
Yeah, I was like, fuck you. You don't know what I know. You don't know what I do. And so I got really, then I was upset for the other reason. But at least I'm off the hook and I'm not in jail.
There was a, what was it? A funny story. A friend worked at a company and she had her laptop on her computer. She had her laptop on her computer and her boyfriend, this was her story, went and looked over at it and saw the numbers and he went and shorted the stock and he made $250,000 and they arrested him for it.
Yeah. It's crazy stuff. But it has to be happening all the time.
All the time.
It has to be happening all the fucking time. There's no way. There's no way that this stuff is I, like, I remember I have a friend who worked in a hedge fund in New York, and I don't know if this is true or not. I don't even know if he was just kind of like, I don't know, exaggerating, but he's like, every Monday there was a manila folder that would show up under our door. And he's like, we paid a lot of money for this manila folder. And inside this manila folder was some information. And he's like, every hedge fund had this manila, was getting this manila folder. And he didn't tell me anything else. He didn't need to tell me anything else. I was like, say no more. You know, I love a good conspiracy when I hear one. I'll infer the rest from here.
Sure. We know, haven't you seen the TV show Billions? We know they already do that. All right. Can I bring up one idea that I saw? So last week, apparently I shit on something called the Gen Z Mafia. I didn't mean to shit. I didn't mean to shit on it. More so, I was making fun of the article because I have no idea what it is, but I did shit on it, so I'll own up to that. But I apologize, kind of. But anyway, one of the kids reached out to me. So Gen Z Mafia stuff, it's this group of, I guess, Gen Z people who have like a Slack channel or something. What?
Yeah, they have a Discord, I think, or a Slack.
A Discord, and they just like are building stuff. And one of the kids reached out to me, which is pretty cool. And I don't have any insider information, but on his profile, this kid, he must be 20 years old. He has this website called Fion Tech. So it's Fion, F-I-O-N .tech. And the headline is detect wildfires before they start, stop them before they spread. And he's building, it's just fascinating. He's building technology to help you track and predict when and where wildfires are going to start. And it looks like he's going to sell to hedge funds and people like that. Crazy fascinating. I did a little bit of research. There are people in this space, obviously. And they, some of them are meaningfully big, hundreds of millions in sales, it looks like. But crazy cool that A, this young kid is doing this, and B, there's that this exists. Pretty cool if they can pull it off.
Yeah, that's how awesome. Are they doing this? How are they getting the info?
It says that they have 12 or 15 data sources, and they kind of use those data sources to predict what's going to happen.
Okay, so I just joined the Gen Z Mafia Discord because they had invited, basically when you shit on it and I was like standing up for them, they were like, yeah, fuck Sam and we love Sean. And so I got an invite to it yesterday. So I just joined it. Let me tell you my experience as I joined. So first I joined, and immediately I just had to sign the code of conduct. So it's a Discord. I had to sign a code of conduct, which has been signed by 1,169 people. On the right, there's the council, which is the admins, I think. There's the Ministry of Building, which is another group, 16 people online right now. Yeah, this is crazy. There's a lot of people in here. And I think this is awesome what they're doing. Like, this is what I wish I was doing when I was like 17 years old. Like, this would have been way better than just sitting there and playing NBA 2K all day.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I wasn't shitting on them because I don't know anything about them. But that article was horrible. And the guy wrote to me, he goes, yeah, that article was horrible. She totally, it was by that one journalist that Balaji guy hates. But he was like, yeah, she totally over-exaggerated X, Y, and Z. So it was just the article, but super fascinating group, right?
Yeah, it's great. Okay, I'm going to hang out in here and I'll report back. I'll tell you if it's great. I'll tell you if it's just okay, or I'll tell you if it sucks.
Is it awesome? Go ahead, Steph.
Are they all working on their own projects, or what are they doing?
Well, I think it's like anything, like any group, like some people are actively working on something. Some people are like toying with something. And then a lot of people are just kind of hanging out and, you know, waiting for them inspiration to strike, I guess.
Right. Well, this ties into one of the ideas that you guys have actually talked about before, how like, let me break this down. So one of the things that you guys have talked about, and I agree with, is that corporate training or anything like that, any sort of like educational thing that happens within large companies sucks. And in general, even, education in general is like lacking in terms of it not being like entertaining and not captivating like young people. So what I think people should do, these like large like corporate training companies, is go and like hire a bunch of these Gen Zers to create basically like hype videos, but also to like make the actual training more like a game versus, you know, what it is now that, you know, no one actually wants to go through. And what actually made me really think of this is, Sam, I know you saw it. Did you see the nuclear energy girl, Sean?
No. Who's this?
So she's, let me pull up her actual.
Is this like someone on TikTok?
No, she's on TikTok, but I saw it on Twitter. But so her Twitter handle is Isa, Isaboemeke. Like, I'll just send this to you right now. But anyway, she created this like amazing kind of like TikTok video about and how it works, like why it's actually really chill and why it's better than most other energy forms. And it was like the best example I've seen of someone taking like a relatively boring topic that most people don't want to engage with and making it like so compelling. And so I think these companies should go hire this girl, Isabel, other people, go hire them, say, I'm going to pay you like $10K to go like make a couple of videos about, you know, whatever they're trying to train their employees on. And I think it would kill it. Or, you know, a holding company could do this as well. But you know what I mean? Like, I just think these Gen Zers are so good at actually making content that people want to engage with. It's unfortunately just often not about things that are, you know, important in the world. But yeah, I think someone should do this.
You didn't see this video, Sean?
No, but when I, but you described it great. And I'm looking at it now.
She's weird. She's so weird and awesome.
She looks like an AI like character or something. It looks like, you know, like Lil Michaela or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think this is actually a really genius content idea that I'm going to probably do. Maybe I'll do it pseudonymously and then, you know, but too late. I already just outed myself. So I think it'd be really hilarious if you just hire, you know that scene in the movie, The Big Short. So great movie. And then there's this one scene where they're trying to explain like, mortgage-backed securities or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it like cuts to like, I forgot who, like some actress or some model sitting in a bathtub.
Selena Gomez, I think.
I don't think Selena Gomez, but
yeah. She's in one, and then Margot Robbie's in another.
Margot Robbie is the one who I was thinking of. It's like her in a bathtub with champagne with her like leg out, and then she just explains this like really boring topic, but she's like really sexy. So you're like, oh, I'm entertained enough to go through this. I think somebody should just make, you know, hot models teaching science as like a YouTube or TikTok channel. And I think you just do extremely, extremely well just off that like combination and how controversial / viral it would be.
Yeah. One more thing I'll throw out there related to this. Have you guys heard of Art School? Art, no. S-Q-O-O-L.
No, tell us about it.
It's this guy who I follow on Twitter who's like amazing, like creative genius. His name is Julian Glander. And he created this thing called Art School, which is basically this online game, which is kind of like a parody of actual art school in that, you know, people joke that in real art school, you pay a bunch of money and you don't learn anything. And so he created this like online world where, you know, you have this like character, I think his name like Froshman or something, and you go around and you learn about art, and you actually learn about art through this art AI that grades your art, which is another parody on like how art is actually graded. But you actually do learn about art, and you you know, it is actually like a school. And I thought this was just like a genius example of how you could turn learning into a game that people actually want to engage with. And in general, I just wanted to, you know, shout out Julian because his stuff is awesome.
I went to the website. He has a sales video on Vimeo, and this is a good way to figure out how big something is if you click through and look at the video on Vimeo, you can see how many views it has, or on YouTube, and you could like see like what the engagement is. 35,000 views. A lot of people are buying this. It's $5 to buy this game. This kid is awesome. Dude, Gen Z is so cool.
Hey, don't try to make up for it now. Don't try to make up for it now.
No,
really, I know how you feel about Gen Z.
I have proof. I've written this in our Slack. I said, everyone at Gen Z dresses cool and is good looking, and they can all dance well. This is what I've been on TikTok enough to know this. They all wear Vans and like cool hoodies and have like great skin and badass haircuts.
Great skin.
And they
teens have great skin now?
Dude, I don't know. They all look like Rihanna. They're just like cool looking. But like, look at this website. It's like a cool kid made it. They're like, the nerds are cool.
The nerds are cool.
Oh, we should just end the podcast on that rant. That was amazing.
Have you used TikTok?
I have, but TikTok is like, you know, the one cool kid who gets famous on, like, the feed is like the best of. It's not like what everybody is.
No, they're all creative. They're so creative. Gen Z is so creative. It's because they just grew up with Instagram. They just, God, I love Gen Z. Although they are all like depressed and they don't have sex either. You know
what are they depressed about? I thought they're good looking with great skin and creativity. Why are they depressed?
Well, they only look like that because they compare themselves to one another all the time. I'm telling you, Gen Z has like a massive depression problem and the guys aren't horny. Like that's like a thing. Like, no, for real. Like I went to this sounds so old. I went to a conference and we had a whole session on Gen Z and they're like, the rate at which they're having sex is super low.
Right.
You know what's interesting about that is like I think our society just in general is going towards like Japan. Japan's been like this for many decades, right? They do everything online, like, you know, dudes don't hang out with anyone. They're like, you know, stuff like that, which has been going on in Japan for years. I think Japan is like the perfect place to just look and be like, what's trending in Japan or what trended in Japan like 5-10 years ago?
Steph, I want to hear you describe dudes in Japan again without like you were navigating the tripwires there. Go ahead and try that again.
Well, there are dudes in Japan who, there's a ton of guys who literally like there's an abnormal number of single guys in Japan who don't actually, like, you know, see other people.
They fall in love with like these avatars. Dude, I'm telling you, that's weird.
So my friend Nikita, he's a great follow on Twitter. His handle's like Nikita Beer or something like that. Nikita _ Beer, BIER. And he created that app TBH that Facebook bought. And, you know, it's just like kind of this goofy teen app or whatever. And he's great because he just shits on like a lot of the mainstream stuff. He's like, basically he's tweeted something out like, you know, all the nerds in Silicon Valley arguing over Notion versus Rome. Forget that nobody fucking takes notes. Like no real person takes notes outside of like our bubble. And like, that's not what's interesting or what's hot to like people. And so I like how he says like, these are very provocative things. Another one that like, to me came to mind, that's like of that mindset is, I was looking at like a bunch of internet traffic stats. And the conclusion I came to was, everybody talks about how they want to meditate, but nobody meditates. Everybody masturbates. And like, that's, if you take away one thought about building products for people, try to build the thing that people actually want to do and not the like cool virtue signaling thing that really in actuality, very few people are doing.
That's awesome. He did that tweet. Was that tweet well-loved?
That was me. That one was, the second part was me, but it's channeling my inner Nikita because I've just been reading his stuff and loving it.
You came up with this whole masturbate instead of meditate idea. That's a good one.
Yeah, dude, I just broke ground right here. That was the first time it's ever been said.
That's a good one. Okay, we're going to run with that at a different point. I got to think about that.
That's the title of the podcast. People don't meditate. They.
No, I mean, it's definitely true. I think we're going to wrap up, right?
We're at the hour. My trainer's here. I'm excited.
All right. Thank you, Steph.
Sweet. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
We went through like a third of your document, so you can come back on, every couple of weeks and we could just finish this document at some point.
I'm game for that.
You did the heavy lifting. Thank you.